Welcome to Heritage Breeds, a podcast series that is brought to you by the Livestock Conservancy, an organization involved in protecting nearly 200 breeds of livestock and poultry. This series will introduce you to the animals, breeders, and people working to save them from extinction. Welcome, I'm C.S. Wurzberger, your host, and today we're covering an emotional topic. Is there such a thing as a humane butchering day? I never thought so until I read Misty's blog post last week. It brought tears to my eyes, hurt my heart, but gave me a new and very different perspective on butchering day. I don't know about you, but I have a tough time even thinking about the concept. I know, it's part of the food chain and putting food on our table. Leading the discussion today is Misty Langdon from Our Green Acre. Welcome, Misty. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, C.S. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, first, tell us a little bit about your farm and the animals that you raise.
Well, we're Our Green Acre Farm, and we're located in northwest Arkansas, just off of the Buffalo National River, in a little community called Logap. Our farm is a sixth-generation farm. My mom's family actually settled the Buffalo River, and we've been here ever since. We have several heritage breeds. We have large black hogs, which are my favorite thing of the farm. We have a milking shorthorn cow with also several other breeds of cows mixed in, but she's our only heritage breed of cow. And we have several heritage chickens. We have speckled Sussex, we have Dominicks, and a few Araucanas.
That's great. And now, how did you all get started in farming? I know you said it goes back six generations in the family, but why did you decide to also stay on and keep farming?
Well, growing up, we always had cattle on the farm. We had, of course, chickens, too, and we had goats for a long period of time. But they were raised in a very different manner than we raise our animals now. It was more of a traditional style of farming. We would give antibiotics as needed. We would give vaccinations. It was conventional feed and all of that. And after, I guess I was probably just starting elementary school, and my parents took off-farm jobs. And when that took place, most of the animals, we were able to keep the cows and the goats, but the rest of the animals we kind of let go, and there would be an occasional hog come through, you know, for meat, and we processed all of that ourselves. But I decided that I wanted a clean meat source. In about 2009, I started running long distance, and I needed a good meat source, and I couldn't find one locally. There were a lot of farms that had grass-fed, they had pasture-raised, and a few other what I call gimmicky words that unfortunately don't mean a lot. There weren't any that I felt that were treated really humanely and treated or raised organically, and that's what I was looking for. And so I just decided to grow my own. We had a garden. We've always canned. We have beehives, even do our own maple syrup in the South. Imagine that. But as far as meat goes, we were really lacking in what was available. So we just decided to do our own and started researching more for the hogs because I knew I wanted pork. I just was so afraid to bring hogs into the farm because growing up, that was the animal that we had problems with. I had several occasions growing up that I was nearly eaten by my grandparents' hogs. They were raised mostly in confinement in a barn, and their temperament was very different than the hogs that I raise now. And so I started researching online for a docile breed of pig, and that's how I found heritage animals. I had never even heard the word heritage in reference to farm animals. I pinned it down to two specific breeds, and I chose the large black. And of all the things that I have ever done in farming, all the cursing and the wanting to pull my hair out, I never have questioned the large black hog. They have been the best decision I ever made. They're wonderful. Their nature's wonderful. Their pork is fabulous. And in finding them, I started researching more for other heritage animals. And that's where we came up with the speckled Sussex chickens. We've always had Dominicks on the farm, and I didn't even know that they were a heritage breed. But we've always had those. My grandmother had them, my great-grandmother had them. And we call them Dommers here. So I had to do a little bit of research in finding them and was able to source those locally. And the cattle, we had Jerseys, we had a few crosses, and we thought that that was just the greatest milk ever. And my husband found a milking Shorthorn, and once we found Blossom, we were all just, we're totally in love with her. She's the best cow. She has the best nature, and she has really, really wonderful milk and cream. And with all of our animals, they have to serve two purposes in some way or another. And for the chickens, we do meat and eggs. And for the cows, we get, of course, beef, and we get all of the milk and dairy products. We do our own cheese, our own butter. And the state of Arkansas has just relaxed its laws on raw milk. So we're able to sell raw milk straight from the farm now. So that's been a wonderful addition to what we can do here on the farm and what we can share with others.
That is simply amazing. You've got quite a collection of animals in it.
It's quite the menagerie. My husband let me go at it for about a year and a half, pretty much on my own as far as day-to-day operations. And I think it was a deal of he just kind of wanted to make sure it was going to stick, that I wasn't going to just run away and leave him with all of these animals. But he pretty much takes care of the cows now. He always jokes with everybody, and it's kind of a joke, and it's kind of not. He says, if it comes to the pigs and the chickens, she's on her own. I'm not dealing with those. Now, he helps me a little bit, but by and large, it's me as the one farmer. And I'll get help every now and then, you know, as needed, but I'm pretty much the caretaker.
Well, and what an inspiration and what a story of true girl power to be the farmer, the primary farmer with this whole menagerie of animals. What a great thing to promote to other young ladies that could be listening to this podcast that, you know what? Yeah, we can do it. If there are animals out there that you love and you want to raise, it can be done. So thank you for that inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have a daughter that's 17, and it's never too late to start. I know a lot of people, they have this well-defined path laid out before them of what they're going to do. And if you had told me even 5 years ago that I would be a pig farmer, I would have laughed right in your face, much less an organic, farmer. But doing it this way, it makes a difference. And to me and my family, but also to the other families that we are able to provide meat and other products for.
Well, and I was just thinking about how proud your grandparents, great-grandparents, I mean, all these generations back would just be so amazed and so proud if they could see you here managing the family farm. That would just be so terrific.
I really hope so. In my perfect dream world, that would be the recognition that I would get. Now, I have to say, with my parents, they look at what I'm doing as very odd. It's very foreign to them in that it's just one generation back of me doing things almost the exact mirror image of the way of my family before, my parents, my grandparents, and my great-grandparents. But my parents really bought into the whole conventional farming, you know, doing shots as needed, doing antibiotics, things like that, where we take a more holistic approach. And so to them, I'm still kind of odd. To a lot of our neighbors, I'm a little bit, it's very foreign. It's very different. And so it's going to take a little bit of prodding and a lot of success to get any type of headway made there. But my grandmother and my great-grandmother, I'm making soap in a very similar manner. I'm doing everything we can. We put away. We make our own laundry soap. We make our own dish soap. We make everything pretty much here on the farm. And so it's very reminiscent of just a couple generations back.
Isn't it wonderful to see how we're circling back around to a more natural and holistic and chemical-free way of life? That's just absolutely wonderful and so inspiring. But now let's jump into the topic that we know is the biggest challenge, and that's the one of Butchering Day. So take us back to that day that you wrote your blog post about, and let's really share with the listeners the other side of the story and what you need to do as a farmer.
Sure. And I'm glad that I wrote the blog post that we're kind of referencing. I'm glad I wrote it when I wrote it, because it was still very fresh. When I left that day, I knew I had to write about it, and I knew I had to write about it quickly, because the way that I compartmentalize everything is I can get over it, and I can get over the emotional, and I think that's an ability it's a good thing that I can do that, because in what I do, if I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve every day, I'm not going to be able to do this. It's not going to happen. So as a meat eater and as someone who can't just, I feel like I cannot live without meat, I wouldn't make it very long as a vegetarian, I felt really hypocritical before I started farming. I didn't care where my meat came from. I was just like the majority of Americans now, where I would go to the store, I would pick up a package, that was what was the easiest, and put it in my cart, bring it home, and never gave it a second thought. Once we started raising our own pigs, and the pigs came first, and the beef, they take a little longer to finish, so now we're eating our own beef. But we would sit there at dinner, and my daughter would say, "So who are we eating?" and we would name the pig's name off. And it was a thing of no meat ever went to waste either. Before, there would be scraps, you know, and we would just toss those to the outside dogs and the meat scraps. And now, nothing ever goes to waste, because we see the sacrifice. Yes, the dogs need to be fed, but we need to make sure that we're managing our meat properly, in my opinion. I can make 3 meals out of one chicken very easily, and that just attributes to the sacrifice that animal made. So this last butcher day was a lot more difficult than previous days. We had 4 pigs that we took off, and 2 of those were breeders. And I know when I'm raising feeder pigs, which are the ones that are going to be our pork, I know that their day is coming. So I try not to get too attached, and that's a really hard job in the manner that I raise my pigs. But the breeders, you just really fall in love with them. They become just a member of the farm family. And so I knew going into it was going to be a harder day. The night before, my husband and I hooked the trailer up, and we drove to the barn. And I already had the girls and the 2 boys separated into barn stalls so that I would be able to find them. They have 60 acres that they get to roam every day. So being able to just find them and all of that is something that we have to plan for on butcher day. And got to the barn, and we backed the trailer up, and I put a bale of hay in front of the trailer, and I just opened up their gates, and I was like, "Hey guys, come on, you know, come on." And I stepped up on the hay and into the trailer, and they just jump in behind me. You know, there's no fear, there's no anxiety, no stress whatsoever. And I feed them in there, and I water them in there, and I give them plenty of hay to bed down in, because they stay in there overnight. We have a long drive to the butcher, so they camp out in the trailer overnight. And the next day, we loaded the steers and took their water out so it didn't slosh on them, and drove the 3 hours to the butcher. And the whole way up there, you know, I was kind of joking about, "Oh, these girls," you know, and trying to make light of it. And when we get there, it just sinks in of, you know, this is the last time I'm going to see my girls. And so I get in the back, and we take the steers out first, which is a fairly easy job. They unload easily. They run out, and they go right down the alleyway and into their stall. And I climb in the back with the pigs, and I call each one of them by name, and it was hard. I gave each one of them a rub down, petted their bellies, told them how much I appreciated them, and I thanked them for what they did for our farm and what they were going to continue to do. And then it came time to get out of the trailer. And that was, you know, even harder. And because they're raised the way that they are, I step out and I do my call. Each group of pigs has a different call, and their call was, "Come on, babies." And I've yelled that at them 100 times on the top of the mountain, you know, calling for them to come to me. And so I just clapped my hands and I said, "Come on, babies, come on." And they followed me right down the alleyway and into their new stall. And I told my husband, I said, "You know, we've got to go. I've got to go and give the instructions to the butcher up front, because I can't be back here when this happens." And the butcher that we go to is very humane. They do things a certain way. So I went as far as I could go with them, and then I turned them over to our butcher, who is he's animal welfare approved. And so I know how the treatment is going to go after that.
Oh, it still touches me, from whether I'm reading or hearing your story in person. I guess let's lighten it up a little bit, where I noticed in your blog post, you're also known as the crazy pig lady.
So, I am.
So bring some humor in for us on this.
Yeah, and that goes back to the way that I raise the pigs. They're raised on pasture, which I say pasture, 80% of our property is forest and 20 is pasture. So it's mostly woodland. And I actually received quite an honor for our area, and was awarded the Newton County Farm Woman of the Year this year. And one of the agencies one of the companies that's actually kind of behind that, one of the gentlemen that works there, he was talking to my husband, and he said, "That Misty, man, she just loves those pigs, doesn't she?" and my husband's like, "Yeah, she's pretty crazy about them." But it all goes back to the way they're raised. You know, people think I'm crazy because I'm out there scratching their bellies, and they're so not used to seeing a breed of pig that behaves in this manner, that you can walk out in the field and scratch their bellies and they flop down for a belly rub, or that you can tend to their young with the mama present without being bitten or attacked. And that goes back to the wonderful nature of the pigs.
So true. And I had the honor and pleasure of raising, I had a trio of the Mulefoot hogs, mm-hmm. which are on critically endangered list, as well as the large blacks are, which simply means that, as you know, we've got less than 200 of these pigs in the United States and less than 500 globally. So it's so important for farmers like you to come forward and take on raising these animals. But same thing, I could be right there in the pen when my sow was delivering, and I could be right there taking care and wiping piglets off with the towel and getting them under the heat lamp and getting them over to nurse. And these two breeds, I mean, they're just incredible for people to consider as whether it's pets, whether it's breeding.
Well, and too, it goes back to me, it goes back to that dual purpose. You know, the meat is fantastic. With any type of heritage meat, you're going to get a better quality out of that than you are confinement meat. Confined animals, you're not going to get that type of nature out of them, because they don't know how to behave that way. They are in a pen and they go a little bit crazy. They just don't know how to behave, and it's not a natural environment for them. And so for us, I think the pork tastes better. I think the chicken tastes better. I think the beef tastes better. That all goes back to the heritage animal. And we could make, getting into more, a little bit on the butcher and a little bit on the money side of it, we could make more money if we sold only pork and sold no breeders. But that does not help this breed of pig prosper. It does not bring it back from that critical point. And so by us taking the very best of what we raise on our farm and having the opportunity to sell that as a breeder, that passes those wonderful genetics on to the next generation of those pigs. And again, we could make a lot more money on pork. We have a market for wonderful pork. But we choose to do the breeding program because we want this breed to survive. And that's the only way to do it. There are a lot of people that, because they are a rare breed, they want to sell every piglet as a breeder because maybe they don't have a good pork market to sell at. But in doing that, in selling every piglet that hits the ground, you're dumbing down that breed. You're not passing on good genetics. You're just passing on pigs. And so that's something that we're really proud of, because we haven't been at this just a really long time. And so far, we have already sold to several different states, Colorado, Tennessee, Iowa. We've sold to several within the state of Arkansas. And most of those farms are farms that have never had pigs, never. And they did their research. They wanted a docile pig. They found us online, and they were so impressed by the manner at which these pigs behave that they wanted that for themselves. So they're not only just starting a new heritage breeding program, but they're actually putting the first pig on their farm. And we even have pigs that were born on our farm in Canada now. So we're passing on those genetics to our neighbors to the north in hopes that we'll get more diversity and build a stronger breed.
Which is exactly what we're looking to do. And it's the purpose of this Heritage Breeds podcast, to help spread the word and the mission and connect more of you folks up and other listeners that are out there, whether they're looking to become a pig farmer themselves, or they can also be supporting you by buying the meat products as well. So this is just amazing the way it all comes together full circle. And now, as we're wrapping up our interview, please share with the listeners, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, you can find us online, of course. The web is the easiest. Our email is misty@ourgreenacre.com, and that's MISTY at OURGREENACRE.com. And our blog post that we were speaking about today can be found on our website, and that is OurGreenAcre.com.
And I'm also going to put a direct link over to the blog post that we're talking about today, as well as a link to your Facebook page. See, I saw you've got Pinterest off your site, and then, of course, a link to your website as well.
Yeah, we try to keep that accessible for everyone. Photos are a huge hit. Everybody enjoys that. And it's just kind of a full circle. You get to see the beginning and the end. And if you're going to eat meat, that's, you know, I feel like the humane way to do that is to find a humane farm.
And that is such a good point, where even now there are different certifications out there. And as people are starting to realize and really understand what is happening in a negative way at these large commercial factory farms, I'm so excited to see this movement where more and more people are not only turning to their local farms for quality food, but really looking at, what was the life of that animal? How happy were they? I mean, to have acres and acres. What did you say, 60 acres?
These pigs get to be.
Oh, that's just for the pigs. I mean,
our entire farm is about 500 acres.
Wow.
And the pigs get 60 of that. And what kind of spurred this post on Butcher Day, too, is my sister-in-law came to visit, and she was just almost amazed and appalled that we could actually eat the animals that we raised. And I said, you know, the way that I look at it is, when you go into a grocery store and you buy one package of beef, you're consuming thousands of different cows. Here, you're eating a specific cow. You know how that cow was raised. You know its life from beginning to end on the farm, and even at the butcher from that. And our standards we're a member of Animal Welfare Approved, and our standards there are very clear, and we're audited once a year, and that provides people who were vegetarians at one time with an opportunity to eat meat, because the reason that they were vegetarian was because they couldn't source humanely raised meat, and now we're giving them that opportunity.
And thank you so much for sharing this incredible and this touching story today. It's been quite amazing.
Thank you for having us, and we really appreciate it, and hope that it reaches out to a vast, you know, array of people.
It sure will. And listeners, remember to check out Misty's website, OurGreenAcre.com, and also head over to HeritageBreeds.org to listen to additional episodes of this show. Plus, for more information and to access a directory of all the heritage breeds in the United States, go to LivestockConservancy.org. Again, thank you so much for your interest in these historic breeds. We look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Welcome to Heritage Breeds, a podcast series that is brought to you by the Livestock Conservancy, an organization involved in protecting nearly 200 breeds of livestock and poultry. This series will introduce you to the animals, breeders, and people working to save them from extinction.